Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Queers of Time podcast.
I'm Matt.
I'm James.
I'm Kemi.
And I'm Kat.
And this is a podcast to talk about all the gay stuff in the Wheel of Time.
Because we're gay and we like the Wheel of Time.
As always, thank you to Lux, our Feral Venerator of Serene.
And today's episode, we're once again stepping away from the Wheel of Time to continue our book club series. In January, it was Carmilla by Sheridan Le Fanu. And this month, February, it is going to be Project Knot by Chelsea Ferretti. Last month was a Victorian novel by an Irish guy, and this month is a 2-year-old graphic novel by a New Zealand woman. So we are already moving across time and space to a different genre and more explicit queer rep. So that's what we're talking about today.
And that was a very cute book. A very, very quick read and very cute overall. So for those who did not got to pick up the book, the basis of the story is we start the story following Ren, a teenage boy from 1996, who seems to have a very bad day. And then something weird happens and he wakes up in 2122. Mm-hmm. So quite a long time later. And apparently he's there for a student exchange program. So student of the future, getting to see students of the past and asking them questions and this kind of thing. Obviously, this is a sci-fi graphic novel. If things were that simple, we wouldn't have much to talk about. So things turns out not to be that great.
Yeah, it's a not so it's like it's one of those books like the premise seems like a meet cute because there is romance in it, and it's I believe they're all queer romances. In some way, shape, or form. And it's a very queer normative society. And it doesn't present the future as dystopian, but definitely if you're going in expecting just a cutesy sort of meet cute, there's a lot of cuteness in it. There's a lot of fluffiness in it, but it gets very dark. It gets very dark in places because it is first and foremost a sci-fi adventure story with a very heavy romance subplot. And I would say that the romance subplot is the fluffy part, and the sci-fi adventure aspect is like the, oh boy, stuff's happening type of plot.
Yeah. I did find on the sci-fi part, I was a bit surprised by how the society of 2122 is not that different from ours. They're a bit more progressive on some aspects. It's very, like, the queer normative part is very much there. We get pretty much every queer representation, or almost, I think. But the students are still students, and it's pretty much the same town that right now. It's a bit more futuristic, but there's not, like, huge differences. Except for, you know, the whole time travel thing that seems to be a normalized thing.
Yeah, it's the future conservative sphere. The student body is diverse, and it's not just sexual orientation, queer identity diversity. There's racial ethnic diversity, body type diversity. Like it's all kinds.
Disabilities.
Disability, yes.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm so unused to seeing disability being represented that there's one, not one of the main character, but a significant secondary character.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Tane, his name?
I think so.
Yeah. Who is in a wheelchair, and it literally took me like half the book to finally realize it because I'm just not used to seeing. Is, you know, when you're not used to seeing representations, that you kind of assume that everyone is gonna follow what we've always seen. So like, sometimes I miss queer representation because I'm so used to only seeing straight people. That when the queerness is right in front of me, I'm like, oh,
and there it is.
That felt a little bit like that for me, but it was nice.
It was nice, and so the disability representation, you know, the body diversity, the racial diversity, like none of it was like pointed out saying, look at this person. This person is diverse. It was just like, just in a society.
It's there.
Doing the thing, you know, doing some romance, doing some class assignments, taking down evil forces, you know.
Capitalism.
Taking down capitalism.
Capitalism, basically. It's, oh no, a Neville Corporation. It's a sci-fi book, so what's surprising?
I know. And it's like, and this is like minor spoilers, but like the back of the book doesn't exactly hide the fact that an evil corporation is at the heart of the story. But yes, the year 2122, come for the cute queer romances, stay to take down capitalism.
Yeah.
It's basically it.
And okay, can we talk about how the capitalism, when the capitalism get taken down, the head of the capitalistic like company also gets their somehow queer romance?
I know, it's just...
This was the only queer romance I was like, no, the two evil ladies shouldn't get to like run away together and be happy.
You can't be happy if you're a bad queer.
No.
Jail time for you.
Jail.
Jail time. No sapphic romance for you.
I think I took a note at some point from that.
I was taken aback at that too. And I do feel like there's serious potential here. Though I was also like happy with how the story itself wrapped up, like with Phoebe and Ren,
Gia,
and Mars and Gia.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cute. I will have to say that my favorite moments were every time those two podcasters showed up, because so
yes,
there's a podcast that's keep reappearing in that graphic novel that talks a lot about the exchange novel. They talked also about the rumor about those two ladies that are leading the corporation, mm-hmm. and it's a queer podcast, and I saw that and I was like, oh, they also have their queer podcast.
They still have queer podcasts in the future.
It's us in 100 years, actually.
Yeah, 100 years.
98 years. Oh, no.
Oh, Lord.
No. Oh.
Well, if so, we look good for being that old in 2122. Yeah, I know. I like how the story is structured. Like, I like generally how we see things with the characters, but whenever we need to, like, zoom out and see how things are happening on the global scale, like, we have the podcasters or we have, like, the news cut in and it feels natural. It's like, it's not an awkward jump in, but I love the podcasters. You know, I'm biased.
Yeah.
There were so many dark, like really dark moments, but like really fluffy. It's probably one of the few books that has such extremes, because like take Heartstopper. Like there's some angst in Heartstopper, but it's mostly, you know, fairly fluffy. But then you take something like a more serious series and it's like like The Walking Dead. Like there's a few moments of like levity in The Walking Dead, but it's just dark, dark, dark. And with Project Knot, it's like, okay, here's some fluffiness, but also here's some like stuff to give you nightmares and existential crisis about.
Yeah, especially the existential crisis. Mm-hmm. I guess we can dive into it, because if people didn't want to get spoiled, they should not be listening to that episode anyway.
Yes, spoilers ahead.
The thing that we discover is that they have this exchange program with people that they think come from the past, but mm-hmm. turns out that first we find out that those people are actually not sent back to their past. They are not sent back to their families. They are kept, like, once the exchange program is over, they are kept in a big laboratories and scientific facilities mm-hmm. to conduct some tests on them, and we don't really know what those tests are about, just that they are stuck there forever without seeing anyone for the rest of their life.
As guinea pigs.
As they are basically guinea pigs. Mm-hmm. And when our protagonists at some point go to these facilities to rescue all of the other people there, all of the other students, and then they find out that those students are not people from the past. They're actually just clones from the past with, mm-hmm. like, they call that 4D clones, which I'm guessing assuming that they keep their memories and their notion of time.
Yeah.
And so you get with a few protagonists that learn that they are clones and that they have no one to go back to.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the very dark part of it.
It's very fucked up. And like,
that's so fucked up.
It's honestly like, it's a really good, like, not metaphor, but it's a good parallel to like explore with queer identities, because when a lot of people come out, it's like they discover, oh, this entire past that I thought I had was based on a lie. And now that my family knows my true self, I have no home, I have no past, I have no family. So like, there's a lot of parallels there. I mean, you don't have to like analyze it to that level if you don't want to, but like, I do like doing that sort of analysis. And so I felt that it was a really fitting type of storyline to parallel, that the clones are essentially like just dumped off, like just dumped and studied, after being essentially ogled and put on like display.
I mean, when we think about it, those exchange students, from the start, they are called subject, which should have been like fucking a quote to everyone. I don't get why like everyone from the future saw that and was like, yeah, it's completely fine to call those people from the past subjects. Not creepy at all. Yeah, I do agree with the interpretation you were giving, especially since the graphic novel kind of end up with some found family kind of vibe. Because mm-hmm. since there's no one to go back to in the past, like all of the clones have to figure out what to make of their lives now. And turns out that the company also had a bunch of files about, because they are technically real people that got copied from the past. So those people have existed. So those people, they have historical information about them, about their life, about the choices they have made in life. And so the clones do get to see that files and make the decision of whether to look into what your life could have been or not to. And right. the main character decides not to, which I thought was a very nice thing. I really liked that decision at the end of him, because it made sense. He has to figure out who he is now in 2122 mm-hmm. instead of staying stuck in his past that he'll never be able to leave.
Right. And his past is based on a lie. For him at least. I do like the final scene where we find out that the original Ren is implied to have had like his own happy ending in some way. So like past Ren and current Ren are two different people, but they both seem to have like found something meaningful, because I believe that Ren was like running away because he wasn't ready to come out to his family, because he's, you know, 1996.
Yeah, I think there was that. And past Ren had a pen pal called Georgia.
Yes, Georgia.
That he wanted to see. He's been writing her for a while, but I think they never got to meet. Mm-hmm. And his pen pal knows about him being gay. And like, Ren wasn't happy in his life. He was being bullied. He didn't know what to do with his life. His mother apparently wanted to send him away so he could find a purpose or something.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't with a bad intent, but something that he definitely did not take well. So he wanted to find out his pen pal, but on the way there, he gets transported to the future. So we never get to see who that pen pal was, and I kind of wanted to, because...
Yeah, I mean, I do like how the last panel is like basically the past Ren showing up, and it's like, to me, it feels like he gets to meet his pen pal, and they probably become friends. And I would like to think that Ren, like the 19, our era Ren, like has his own version of a happy ending, which probably doesn't involve human experimentation.
Awfully.
Poor Ren. Poor future Ren. But yeah, I loved Ren. I loved Mars. Mars was just he was the definition of like a cinnamon roll type of character.
A golden retriever.
A what? A golden retriever. Yeah, a golden retriever.
Yeah. It's, I don't know.
And then there's Gia and Phoebe, who are just their own kind of special.
Phoebe was very, very fun. Phoebe is another one of the subjects. So another one of the clone. And mm-hmm. She's taking this whole school exchange in a way more positive way than Ren. Ren hates it from the start because it feels like school when he was supposed to be on his summer break. So already kind of hates the whole thing and he hates the attention that it gets him. Phoebe is more like, she's very extroverted.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
She's a lot more sociable than Ren. So she finds friend everywhere and she's the kind of person who's never afraid of doing something and she's not afraid of the ridicule. I don't know whether that's a way to say that in English or not.
Yeah. I think that's I think it's accurate. She's very much the sunshine to Gia's grump.
Yeah. I love, for example, that scene when she's trying to get Ren and Mars to have some time to talk. So she's faking out breaking her legs so so people would be...
In the worst way.
Yeah, and it's like the worst acting ever, but she has no shame. No, yeah. And I like that kind of confidence.
Yeah.
Especially as someone who does not have that kind of confidence and who cannot support secondhand embarrassment. Like, I would die to not get any sort of secondhand embarrassment.
Same. No, Phoebe was just a delight.
I cannot watch a movie that is centered on secondhand embarrassment. That to tell you. Like,
so you don't like The Office, basically, because that is all secondhand embarrassment.
I watched one episode and I was like, nope, that thing is either too old or just not for me.
Yeah, which is very fair. No, it's definitely... it's definitely that type of show. But yeah, Phoebe is just like chaotic, messy, queer, I don't know how else to describe her. You pretty much described it perfectly. Like, just, she's terrible at pretty much everything she tries and she knows she's terrible and she doesn't care and she does it anyways. And if anything, she just hams it up and like just embraces it and embraces who she is, which is why... One of the reasons why I love her so much as a character. I mean, all the main characters are good.
Yeah, all the main characters are very good. But like for someone who's supposedly come from 1996, she also doesn't have any sort of internalized homophobia,
mm-hmm.
which is refreshing. She keeps flirting with Gia, who does not vibe with it.
it's so funny. It's poor Gia, like... Gia was on a mission and Gia like had a very important mission and she's very driven and I love Gia, but like she did not know what to do with Phoebe.
They did not know what to do with...
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah, they did not know what to do with Phoebe, which granted, who of us would know what to do with Phoebe, to be honest?
Because like Phoebe, as soon as she see Gia, she's always stuck to the basket. I don't like that's a French expression that I just don't English, but like she's sticking to them.
Sticking to their basket?
It's like, I don't know, it's a...
Oh, clinging to their side.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to find an expression, I could not find it.
There's an expression in English, and one expression is like, a person has become another person's shadow.
Yeah, it's kind of that.
But that's mostly for like, I mean... I don't know, like, I think that's... I've heard that with kids, like, when kids idolize an adult and follow them around everywhere, they become that adult shadow. But I guess that's... Phoebe's kind of like a kid.
She's glued to Gia, basically.
Glued to their side.
That's what I was trying to find.
Yes.
And it's hilarious because Gia, at the same time, like, Gia used to be a student at the university that does this exchange program, but a few mm-hmm. years ago, she got expelled after one of those exchange. Because one of the subjects of the exchange died and the corporation like kind of hid that, say, oh no, she got hurt, but she got saved at the last minute. It was fine. We'd send her back to her past. See, here's a picture of her in her future. You can see how happy she is. There's no concern to have about the timeline and this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Gia is like, no, fuck that. I saw that person die. So I'm going to figure out how to screw that corporation and find proof of their evil wrongdoing. Is there a wrongdoing that could not be evil?
Mm, Yeah. I mean, there's like little naughty things that you can do that's technically wrongdoing.
Okay. So Gia has a mission.
Yes, Gia has a mission, and it's a good mission. But they do not know how to handle Phoebe. But of course, I don't think anybody would know how to handle Phoebe. One of the interesting things is like a lot of future, like time traveling into the future stories depict the future as super dystopian or utopian, whereas Project Knot doesn't take that approach. Like Chronotech is evil, but you don't get a sense that the future is like, yes, there are evil corporations, but there are good people, and then there are also people in the government and in corporations who want to do the right thing. And it just felt like a more realistic sort of sense of the future. Like, I know it could strike some people as boring because, oh, the future, we want stuff like Hunger Games or Terminator, where it's like Thunderdome style dystopia, or like a utopia, like in H.G. Wells as the Time Traveler. But I thought the realistic depiction of the future where society has progressed somewhat, but there are still some problems that currently plague us, I thought that was pretty refreshing, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what I was trying to say regarding how the future didn't seem that different from today, because it's still a bunch of teenagers going to school, and they still have social media, and sure, like, the corporations they like or do not like are different. But they're still like, yeah, they're still podcasts, they're still news media, they have a bit of a fancier tech, but it's also not like revolutionary, which at the same time makes sense because 100 years is not that huge. Like when you think about the science fiction of like a few decades ago, when people would think that, oh, in 2020s, we would have flying cars and artificial intelligence and robots and this kind of thing. And we are so far from that.
Yeah.
So sometimes maybe we are just too ambitious about what human can do, or we just don't predict well what we are actually doing, because we were like, a few decades ago, people were talking about flying cars and this kind of thing, but did they think about social medias?
I mean, it's sort of interesting, like, because if you think, like, scale everything back 100 years, and, like, so say a person from 1922 is suddenly yeeted into 2022, like, yeah, they would be, like, really blown away by a lot of what's happening, but, like, radio shows, they would totally get that, because, like, 100 years ago, there were fictionalized radio shows that were basically audio plays, and we still have that today. Like they've sort of come back in the form of podcasts, like fiction podcasts and story podcasts, and you know, radio is still around in the form of podcasts and I guess radio shows. But you know, a lot of things that people were concerned about 100 years ago, or a lot of like entertainment based things, we're still like we have today, like slightly different, more advanced, but like it's the same. And I was like, I read like a few articles, like just from like old newspapers, about like old people complaining about how the youths these days like make up identities, and they don't know what they want. Their kids, they're too young to like identify as this or that. And this is stuff from like 100 years ago. So the kids they were complaining about are mostly deceased now, or else in their like late 90s. So it just goes to show that like things really stay the same.
I've seen similar articles about, you know, older generation complaining about the younger generation. I've also seen a lot of those articles about men complaining about the loss of masculinities at every decade. And it's so hilarious.
It really is. Men have no chill. They never have and never will. Oh, that rhymed. I'm a poet and I didn't know it.
I guess if we think about 100 years ago, I mean, one big difference, the internet is still a revolution in itself.
Yeah.
It's a different industrial revolution in a way.
Mm-hmm.
The way it changed communication, the way it changed how we interact with each other is probably something that would be complicated to grasp. A few decades ago, even. More like half a century to a century ago, I would say.
Yeah, it's weird to think, because like a lot of people think that the internet created misinformation, but that's not true. Like the internet allows us, like, in 1922, if two people were talking in a bar at a house and like, oh, who was this person or that person, they would have to go to the library and they'd have to find a book about it and then look it up and then read it. And that's how they would find the answer. Today, we can just Google it. But also, there's a ton of misinformation out there. And it was the same back in the 2000, in like, you know, 100 years ago, like the New York Times, you know, ran pieces that were just flat out wrong, like just incorrect news. But like today, the problem is that there's so much out there that it's hard to tell what's real and what's not. Whereas the problem back then is that it wasn't enough. So if you got news that was wrong or just misinformation, like, you know, snake oil salesmen, that's like, you know, that's a real thing. Like people used to go around selling like powdered snake venom and stuff and saying it was like for this, this or that. Like there's no information and it's very difficult to tell unless you go to a doctor and like have them test it, like take months to find that information. So it's like, misinformation's always existed. The internet just changes the dynamics of how we deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, propaganda always was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's internet did change that. Like, it's the speed of the misinformation that, like, how fast wrong information can spread. And this strange phenomenon that misinformation tends to spread faster than truth. Which there's been a few studies about that. It's something that I kind of don't really understand why, like, fake news gets so much, gets so amplified so quickly compared to maybe the truth is too boring and people need some entertainment.
Yeah. I mean, people want to be angry. I mean, look at Fox News, Fox, and honestly, the other major news networks also, like, thrive on keeping people angry. I mean, that's how they get views. And not to get too far off topic, but back to Project Knot, like, we see a lot of how that propaganda still works. You know, Chronotech is a master at propaganda. And it's sort of interesting to see in graphic novel form how that plays out from both sides. Like, as the readers, we know everything. Well, not everything, because, you know, there's plot twists, but like, when we know that Chronotech is evil, like, we see the propaganda play out from both sides. And it's just fun. Like, I know that she doesn't have a crystal ball and she doesn't see into the future, but I imagine that propaganda will still be the same in 100 years as it is now.
Yeah, and Chronotech really seems to have such impact on the world there. Like, people are wearing Chronotech swag because it's a fashionable thing. We haven't talked much about Mars. But Mars is very much a tech nerd that is is a fanboy of Chronotech. He wears Chronotech shoes. He created a tiny robot and a drone based on Chronotech like technology. He wants to be part of that student exchange program. He is devastated when he gets expelled from that university because of some shenanigans with the exchange program. He really believes in it. He kind of reminds me of when I started in the tech industry. Tesla was the big thing, and it was at a time where Musk wasn't that disliked.
Musky?
Yeah. Musk was a lot more quiet at that time. And it was not as known how shitty of a person it is. So Tesla really felt like that edge-cutting company that was a must-go to be at. And that was not an English phrase.
I totally understood what you're saying.
And then you get a disillusion after that. And that kind of reminded me of that.
That's a good parallel, too. There's a lot of really good parallels in Project Knot, like, and that's part of why I love it, because, like, yeah, it's the time travel adventure story, and yes, it has cute, fluffy romances, but, like, you can, if you want to, you can really dig into it. Like, you can dig out the themes, apply them to how they apply to our life. You can just really dig into the story and reread it, because this was a reread for me, and I noticed things that I didn't notice before, like, as far as, like, themes go. But, yeah, the Tesla's a really good comparison.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember like moments that would be worth talking about.
Ren being a dork. I mean, Mars being a dork, basically, which is like the whole story, basically.
And especially like Mars is such a fanboy at first because he's in that exchange program is the one that is linked to Ren for the exchange. So he's supposed to show him around and they're supposed to do some school project together and this kind of thing. But Mars, just from the fact that he's talking to someone that comes from the 1990s, is such a fanboy because of that. And mm-hmm. Ren, on top of that, is a very good-looking, like, teenage boy. And Mars is gay. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't help. So there's a bit of... at first, it's kind of awkward because Mars is overdoing it so much. And Ren do not want to talk about the past, do not want to hear about the exchange program at all. He just wants things to go back to normal. So Mars kind of have to learn to take a step back so they can have fun. Like, they go to an arcade room and play a bunch of games together. And apparently that's something that you get at every century also.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess it was like pool halls back in the day. Yeah, another... The first moment of the novel that, like, made me go, okay, this is going to be a dark thing, is the finding out there was two future Rens and seeing the first one die and thinking that it was our Ren and then finding out that it wasn't, but being confused about what was happening. Like, that just messed me up. I had to stop reading for a bit and just sort of cool down from that scene, because that was something.
So, I'm very bad at not reading spoilers. And there was some discussion on our Discord that I should have avoided, but I am bad at that. So I kind of... I had some hints about the cloning thing. So especially like the book start with we see a first Ren that wakes up and then run away and doesn't seem to be caught by mm-hmm. by the corporation. And then we get to see another Ren that wakes up and doesn't remember that moment. So very quickly I was like, that's probably not the same guy. Which means there's probably two person around. No, there was a time where I was not entirely sure whether they were fully clones or whether it was alternative timelines. Or I was very confused at first because we see especially that girl that like Ren number one finds. We see her first time in the first chapter and then it takes a few chapters to see her again.
Yeah.
And...
It's a very well-constructed plot.
Yeah.
Even if it confused me at times.
No, I think it was really, really well done because it's like it's five different chapters. The story progresses very naturally, I think. Yeah, there was plenty of things happening in every chapter and kept me on my toes. I really liked it overall. Mm-hmm. I did find like the end a little bit quick, like...
Yeah.
I didn't get how they got out of the facilities and then suddenly the corporation got caught. Maybe it's like Tane who called the cops? I'm not sure.
Yeah. It sort of lends itself to a sequel. I would be fine. I feel like there's a complete story without a sequel. But it's hard because like in this day and age, we're so like Hollywood especially is so much sequels, prequels, spinoffs. And like, I don't feel like there needs to be a Project Knotverse. But, like, there are some loose threads, and I wouldn't be upset if there was another installment, but I wouldn't be upset if this was it, if that makes sense.
I wouldn't say, like, I wouldn't call that what I was talking about loose threads more that at some point you need to conclude the story and, or you leave exactly the facility after finding out, like, they found the student they wanted to find, they found the answer they wanted to find. They get some fight with the two leaders of the corporation who escape. But maybe on reread, I would exactly understand what was going on. I feel like it's the cops that the cops showed up or something like that. But I didn't really get what made the corporation fail because we don't really see the information about the clones being revealed to the public.
Yeah, it could have used another 30 pages, maybe. Of
content
or of art. 20 pages.
After reading it, I didn't really felt the need for more. Mm-hmm. Outside of like, you know, those kind of quick end and the quick ending. But it was an interesting book. I really had a nice time reading it.
Yeah, same. I have good taste in books. What can I say?
Yeah, I know.
James and Kat aren't here to bring me down a notch.
I mean, most of what I've read, I'm pretty sure you, like, maybe you've read them. It's fine. One scene that made me laugh a lot was when they managed to get Tain to help them when they were infiltrating that second facility.
Oh, yeah.
And Tain is basically someone working for the security of the corporation. So he has access to some of the camera, but apparently not of the cameras of that secret facility. So he finds out how to get access to that. And basically what ends up happening is that he flirts with like another guard who...
falls for it.
Suddenly has to go break up with his own boyfriend so that he could be with Tain.
It's so bizarre, but like...
It's so hilarious. It's
great.
Made me laugh. That was a nice character.
There's so many fun moments. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that it was it wasn't only Ren. We had a few different main characters that all got some good development. We got a few secondary characters who got also some good development. I liked it.
Yeah, that's why some behind the scenes of Queers of Time is that like when we're doing the book club, like when we're planning out like what books to propose or whatever, we want like a diversity of representation. So Carmilla was sapphic and it was, you know, more horror, and we want, you know, we want fantasy, sci-fi, we want modern stories, and we also want MLM or Achillean stories as well. We also want stories with trans characters. But Project Knot is one of those that I sort of classified as sort of everything, because even though Ren and Mars like is billed as the main romance, like I felt that the other main characters got they got a lot, like they also felt like main relationship developments. It wasn't like, so like I feel like Project Knot is just a queer book and not necessarily one that's, you know, sapphic focused or whatever focused.
Gia is non-binary. We get to see Gia and Phoebe, even if it's like they end the book kind of going together to London. They are not together, but they're like good friends, and you feel like they could be more later on.
Pillow friends.
Maybe one day.
Maybe pillow friends.
We get those podcasters who are definitely a couple.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's two ladies. We get the two two leaders of the corporation living together after
the evil
after one of them. The evil sapphic. After one of them literally said to the other, "I only did this for you."
I only did war crimes for you.
Basically, it's like, no, I don't care about this corporation. I'm just following you, whatever you want to do. I was like, come on, dude.
Don't blame me for the human rights violations I committed. I did it for love.
Yeah. We also get like Tain and Tain flirting with that other person. So another queer character. Yeah, it's it's very queer. And also like even, I don't know if you noticed, but like when they freed all of the other clones, like you do see like a few other couple among them and this kind of thing. And it's like, oh, it's cute.
It is cute. So for those who are listening, like it is a very dark journey, but the ending is there is a rainbow and there is sunshine at the end. So don't go into this worrying that it's going to be bleak and leaving you feeling sad and hopeless, because it won't.
It's not a graphic novel by Brian K. Vaughan, who apparently is known for writing bad ending to every of his graphic novel. I read Paper Girls from him, which was also like, I'm thinking about that because it's also like a sci-fi time traveling thing, and there's some queerness there, but it doesn't end well. So
yeah,
this is not the same vibe.
It's good vibes.
Yeah,
but I think that's
That's about it for me.
Same.
Oh, I had one thing to say because I did a poll on Patreon last week to figure out what's going to be our book for Mars, and the book that was picked is Maurice by E.M. Foster.
Oh.
So that's going to be another oldie because it's a book that was written during the First World War, so around 1913, 1914, and published in 1971.
Going to get Professor Matt.
We're definitely going to get Professor Matt. I'm very interested about that. Do you know whether it's a long read or not?
No, it's not. It's a fairly short book. And also for those, just a little teaser, it's not only one of the first explicitly queer books and written in the English language, it is probably the first that has an explicitly happy ending for the main couple. And for a book that was written in the 19-teens, that is nothing to sneeze at. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But and that's not really a spoiler because that's its reputation. Like it's a reputation for like being one of the first queer romance novels in English and also like having a happy ending. But it's the journey that matters, and it is a good book. But so Maurice, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Okay.
So that's gonna be for March.
Sounds good to me.
And on this, thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Queers of Time. We hope you had a nice time. If you have read Project Knot, feel free to join our Discord and tell us everything you thought about it. And if you want to join us for the next book, you can also join our Discord to tell us all about it. What else? We are on Twitter. We are on Tumblr and Blue Sky sometimes. And we also have a Patreon if you want to support us. You can also leave a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where people can leave review to podcasts so that people can learn about us and find us and listen to us. And we'll be more and more people on the Discord, and then it's going to be queer domination of the world.
Yes.
That's the end game, right?
That's the end game.
Okay, bye.
War crimes against the straits. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you all for listening. This was Queers of Time, a Wheel of Time podcast. The music is Dance of the Witches by Julius H.